We are the ladies of Spark My Interest. My name is Diana.
Do I save this for Halloween? I was like, I can't wait 10 months.
I am Deborah.
Did he do it?
Yeah.
I am Jesse. I was a guy magnet, you guys.
That's just a regular day for Jesse.
We all need to edumacate ourselves. So I have a song in my head.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's my favorite song in my head right now, so I feel good.
Do you have an all-time favorite song?
That's what my question is.
Ooh. No, I don't. I mean, there's so many that I like.
I have like a handful of songs that I'm like, I'll never get sick of it. And okay. The first one that comes to my mind is Tracy Ullman's They Don't Know About Us.
Baby.
That's a great song. Yep.
Gosh. I mean, I never get sick of Fly Me to the Moon. I also love that one that Dinah Shore sings, Sleepy Lagoon. That was one I used to sing.
I don't think I know that song.
I don't know that at all.
A sleepy lagoon, a tropical moon, and two on an island. No?
No. I do not know that.
Check it out. It's really good.
I can't believe you guys don't like immediately say, bam, this is the song. This is my favorite song. You don't have
like
a...
I can't believe you are. Like, yeah. It's so hard. It really depends on my mood. I mean, like I said, I have maybe five or six that I would be like, yeah, I'm not going to get sick of that. I could live with it. But my all-time favorite, I genuinely, I don't know. It could be something totally different tomorrow. What is it?
Yeah, tell us.
You're leaving us in suspense.
There She Goes by The Laws.
Really?
Really? So I know you love that song, but I would not have guessed that as your favorite.
There she
what?
Goes.
Oh, yeah.
There she goes.
I was listening to it in the car. I have it on a disc twice. I have it by Sixpence None the Richer, and then I have it by the Laws.
Everybody out there, yes, she did say a disc. Diana still listens to CDs in the car.
Well, Diana drives an old car, but she loves that car, so CDs it is. Anyway, I feel good. That was the point of me talking about my favorite song stuck in my head.
Well, there she goes again with her.
If you are listening to us for the first time, we are the ladies of Spark My Interest. My name is Diana.
I'm Deborah.
I'm Jesse.
And every week we get together and we vote to see who had the most spark-worthy article. And still prize is TBD. But you know what? We just want the glory of the win.
Yeah, the glory.
I have a spark me up.
Ooh.
So as you guys know, we mentioned it last week or the week before. Jesse came and stayed with us over the weekend so we could do a little photo shoot. And in the process, she stayed at my house, got to see the new kitchen, which we were very excited about. And I'm going to tell you, so we have a photo hanging in our bathroom. It is the picture at the very end of the movie, The Shining. I love that photo. And it genuinely makes people happy when they come out of your bathroom. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Because it's subtle, but it's also not at all.
Oh, yeah.
But our bathrooms are like, it's a gray, white, black theme. It's actually very light in there. It sounds super dark, but it's not. And right above the toilet hangs Jack Nicholson. He's kind of at that New Year's Eve party, just like, I'm here and it's New Year's Day. And the other day I was using that shower instead of the bathroom in my bedroom. And when I got out, I was like, I was so tired. It had been like a really, really long day. And I looked at it and I was like, Jack Nicholson looks weird. Like, I don't remember him looking like that in that photo. He must have just been so much young. Why does he look like that? And then all of a sudden, I don't know if like one of the cats came in or whatever it was. I got distracted and moved on with my life. I didn't even think anything of it. And then my in-laws were in town, so I haven't been in that bathroom over the weekend. And then yesterday, Jeff's like, he comes out of the bathroom. He's like, oh my God, did you not notice? And I was like, oh, notice what? And he's like, that picture. I'm like, oh, I did notice something was weird with it. What is it? So we go in there and Jesse has photoshopped her face in, not only over Jack Nicholson's face, but also the woman right next to Jack Nicholson. And when Jeff was peeing, he's like, man, that girl looks so much like Jesse Kinnevin. I cannot believe I've never noticed this. And then all of a sudden his eyes move and he's like, wait a second. Jack Nicholson is like Jesse.
Oh my God, that's too funny. How did you do that?
Well, you know, it's funny.
I need to hear the story because I send you a text and I'm like, oh my God, this is hilarious. And she's like, I'll tell you the story when we record.
So that prank is a year and a half in the making.
I thought you were going to say it was there for a year and a half. And
no,
I was like,
I wish it were.
Oh my gosh.
But I came up with the idea about a year and a half ago, and I had printed the picture. I went to your house. I was all set to install it and it was too small. And I was like, God damn it. And I had to re-measure it and get the right sizing because it's an unusual sizing. And I went back home and did it all again. And
then you had to wait an entire quarantine to do it?
Exactly. The pandemic hit before I could go up there and do it again. So
when I told you you were staying at my house over at Deborah's, were you like, yes?
Yeah, that picture has been in the back of my minivan for a year and change, waiting to go to your house.
But what made you go, I'm going to do this? Too
funny.
You know, I think it was all the Photoshop stuff we'd been doing. Like, I'd done a lot on Facebook, and I know Jeff was into it. And mm-hmm. I was just like, they have all these photos hanging up in their house. Like, what? Wouldn't it be funny? I just like mess with one of them. And to see how long it would take you to notice. And it didn't take long. I was like, oh, that'd be so cool if like a year goes by and I'm like, check out your bathroom. But I was like, you know, I could do it two ways. I could be real subtle and just do the lady next to Jack Nicholson and then have you guys like be like, what? Like, or I was risking you not noticing at all. So I went ahead and so I was like, I'll just do Jack Nicholson and see how long it takes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jack was the indicator for me. But honestly, if you had just done the girl, Jeff would have noticed that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she's like, man, that looks like Jesse. Oh, wait a minute. It is Jesse. We got to post this thing. Yeah. Yeah. Put it on the old gram. It's going to be, we'll get to see Jesse's handiwork. Very nice. Anyway, wanted to share it. I thought it was a good spark me up. A little different than usual. No little fun facts, except the fun fact is Jesse's great at Photoshopping and sneaking around your house.
Don't trust her with anything.
In my defense, it was the guest bathroom. It would have been a lot harder if it was the master bathroom.
Oh, yeah. I would have been like, what is she doing in there?
How funny.
All right. Well, Do you guys want to hear from our sparkler spot? We sure do. Our sparkler spot of the week is Cameron from Michigan. He is, this is an interesting one. I'm like, all right, he needs some advice. Okay.
Okay.
He writes to us, my girlfriend of 3 years basically has us on lockdown at the moment. COVID fears, you might ask? No. Mm-hmm. Mercury retrograde. Before dating Gracie, this was something I'd only hear in passing from other people and never really thought twice about. Now I find myself dreading these periods of time because of how psychotic she gets. Since May 29th, I've been forbode to travel or even try to book a trip for later in the year, upgrade my internet provider contract, buy any electronics, even in parentheses, he writes, even iTunes songs, or plan any type of social gathering. And this will continue through June 22nd. He has like seven exclamation points. He says, it is insanity. When we first met, I hate to admit it, but I actually found her obsession with reading the sky adorable to a degree. But now it's making me resent her. I'm not wrong to find this annoying, right? Am I a terrible boyfriend to see this as a deal breaker? It's really starting to feel like one. You all seem so logical. And then in parentheses he puts, that's not an insult. It's quite the opposite, I promise. Okay. Would you tolerate such an irrational fear of something like Mercury retrograde? I'll be 30 in 4 months. If this is driving me to my wit's end now, I'd prefer not to waste any more time on this relationship. Would love to know your take on this.
Okay, I have a take.
I'd love to know, does your girlfriend listen to the show?
I'm guessing no, because he uses her name in here, or maybe that's not her name. I don't know, but he calls her Gracie.
Well, here's my take on this. To each their own in life, you know, couples need to be compatible or have some way of finding a middle ground. And if you're not compatible in that way, it's a big red flag. Sorry. I mean, it's not going to end. She's going to keep doing this. So, I mean, if you're not like, I'm not superstitious, and it would drive me nuts if my partner was super superstitious. So I think you need to really think this through with her.
Yeah, I was thinking because that happens. I had to look it up. I was like, when does Mercury retrograde take place? And it's like 3 times a year.
Oh, my gosh. And about 3 weeks each.
Yeah. I was like, oh, man, this is a lot. I was just trying to put it in like the, because I was like, oh, it seems so stupid. Like, oh yeah, well, it's just a little thing. But if she's genuinely not letting you like plan your life for that
live
time.
Your life, yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe it might be time to call it quits.
Yeah, I gotta like, be the same way. We all have our isms.
I mean, give her an opportunity to change, but chances are it won't happen.
Yeah, we say loser. Cut her off. Like, as nicely as possible, just, you know, cut her loose. Cut her loose, man.
Yeah.
Give her the chance to make things right. And if she doesn't, I would, yeah, you can't sign up for this three times.
Guys, it's been 3 years. I'm sure they've had that conversation of like, hey, do we really need to take this seriously this time?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, good luck, man. Yeah. Good luck. Thanks for listening. We hope we're shedding some logical sense on you. And thanks for listening to the pod.
Mm-hmm.
Is it story time?
It is story time.
Okay, I'll go first.
All right. Take it away, Jesse.
So this comes from NASA.gov. I was just kind of looking through space stuff again because I was like, oh, what are they up to? I haven't really looked at their website in a while. And I didn't realize that this year in November, they're going to be launching this new mission. Have you guys heard of the DART program?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So like basically they're going to be taking this rocket up into space and letting this little thing out into space that's going to open up its solar wings and fly towards this little moonlet that's orbiting around an asteroid and bash into it, see if it'll take it off its orbit a little bit. Kind of
really?
Just like the movie Armageddon, right? So they're going to try to, instead of using explosives, they're going to try to just hit it really hard. Basically, at 4 miles per second, this thing's going to run into this asteroid and try to take it off course a little bit.
Why do I all of a sudden have Happy Gilmore in my head going, just tap it in.
But I mean,
I feel like it's just going to go up there and just tap it.
Yeah. And what's cool is they're going to actually have this little bot come off it from the, I guess it was made by the Italian Space Agency. And it's going to like film the whole thing.
So it's wearing leather boots and a really nice handbag.
Oh, man. It's going to just pop off and film the whole thing from afar and send the data back to see how it did. It's pretty amazing.
A little paparazzi right there. And when are they doing this?
It's launching in November.
November.
It's going to get going. And it's using this kind of new propulsion system. It's like an electronic propulsion system. So it's actually going to activate this inert gas that's going to send out this kind of, it's like a bluish green flame, almost like a futuristic, you know, Star Trek-y kind of thing. It's really wild looking.
Do you kind of feel like maybe they know like something big is going to happen maybe like 5 years from now that they're like, let's prep for it now.
Yeah. Like, can we bash something else out of the way? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what is it that we're actually prepping for that we know about is what my question is.
Yeah. They say one, like a big problem asteroid is going to happen. Like on average, it's like 100-year flood, right? It's like every 2000 years, it's of concern. So they want to be ready. But
how do you prepare for something like that?
Like this.
You do these tests.
Yeah.
Like this. That's what my whole article is about, Deborah.
Yeah.
It's, I hope it works.
Me too.
I do too. Yeah. Because it's a game changer really when you think about it.
Yeah. But then also you're like, what if we hit it and then it just wreaks all havoc over something else? You know, it's just bounces off the moon and then bounces back. It's like this horrible mathematical error where you're like, we did it. Oh shit. It's coming back.
It's coming back toward us. Oh no.
Oh shit. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like one of those let sleeping dogs lie scenario sometimes too, where you're like, that one's, it's not doing us any harm. So maybe we just leave it alone. No. Okay.
I did a summer internship at the NASA Astrobiology Academy in college.
Yeah.
And I actually got a chance to meet this guy who gave us a little talk on the group of people that track these asteroids. And they've been doing this for a long time. So, I mean, it's now they're actually finally getting to test something to see if it works, which is really exciting.
Do you have to? I mean, I'm such a skeptic. I'm like, have they already done this before? And then they're like, okay, we should probably tell people now. Like, we know it works. And so we can do this again. And everyone will be like, oh, wow, it's new. But really, we already know it's kind of foolproof.
But it's possible. I mean, NASA is definitely more transparent than the NSA SpaceX. Or the CIA or. Yeah, exactly. It's hard to tell. But it's so expensive to launch these things. And it's hard to do them quietly because it's pretty apparent when things are being launched.
That is true. Otherwise, they get a bunch of people on like Facebook and Instagram going, look what's in the sky. And we need an explanation.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot of technology we have that we will never use publicly until we absolutely have to.
Yeah. And probably for the best. At least that's how I go to bed at night.
Yeah.
Well, interesting. Yeah. I like it. I live with a science teacher, so I get I feel privy to a lot of the stuff he's always telling me about these things. So.
Mm-hmm. He'll be happy to hear this episode.
Definitely. He'll love it.
Coming up in November.
I can go next. All right, Diana, take it away.
So the other day, my in-laws were in town. My mother-in-law and my brother-in-law were here. And we decided to go see the Halloween house, you know, from the first movie, Halloween.
Oh.
With Jamie Lee Curtis.
It's the house that Jamie Lee Curtis, that's her home. Mm-hmm. And she's sitting outside holding a pumpkin because she's going to carve the pumpkin with the little boy that she's babysitting later on that night. And she's waiting for a ride. So the people who own that house are actually, it's in Pasadena and they're delightful. Jeff and I have been there once before and we were like, oh, we have to bring his mom and brother. His brother loves scary movies. So we're like, oh, we'll go there when they're in town. And we happened to see the neighbors out there. They were working on the garden and they were like, hi, you know, they were actually super nice. They said, oh, get the pumpkin off the front porch. And they have just this fake pumpkin so that anybody who comes by can sit on the two cement blocks and hold the pumpkin and take a picture like Jamie Lee Curtis. So
that's amazing that they do that.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, oh, you guys are so nice. And he was like, you know, you got to be a good sport. It's either that or just be grumpy about it.
Yeah.
And he's like, and who wants to do that? And I was like, yeah, that's true. So he's like, have fun. Take your pictures. Anyway, so we were doing that. And I looked down the street and there's a yard sale. And I'm for some reason, like I almost never buy anything at a yard sale. But I was like, ooh, a yard sale. So I was like, let's go.
Yeah, I haven't been able to go to one. I mean, because of COVID. So
yeah, maybe that was it too. I'm like, you guys want to go to a yard sale? They're like, yeah, all right. So the four of us all walked down there together. And the people running it were so delightful. Like just the nicest four women ever. And they had a whole bunch of stuff sitting out. But one of the things was like just a big pile of books. And both Jeff and I were like, oh my God, look at all these books. So we bought four of them. They were each a quarter. And he and I both eyed the same book. And that is where I've got our story today. This book is called Real Ghost Stories.
It's by
Brad Steiger. It's a copyright 2003. And he's like a ghost hunter.
Okay.
So,
okay,
this is about 550
pages. That's the second time you're like, this is going to be good.
This is about 550 pages of ghost stories ranging from all types.
I'm ready for it. Like, get to it. Come on.
And a huge bibliography and also a bunch of appendixes, too. So I knew we were going to record on a weekday this week, which is unusual. So last night when I went to bed, I was like, I am going to just open this book and just whatever page it lands on is what I'm going to do. And this is page 329 is what I turned to. And the second I read the first sentence, I was like, oh, yeah. It says, at approximately 8:50 a.m. on October 3rd, 1963, Colleen Butterball, secretary to Dean Sam Dahl of Wesleyan University, Lincoln, Nebraska, was on her way to deliver a message from the dean's office to a professor when she opened a door and walked into an office that was in the past.
So for our listeners who don't know the twins that well, this is like this is their area where they're from.
Yeah. So we went to UNL, University of Nebraska at Lincoln, but we had two friends go to Wesleyan University, two Mikes. We had the two Mikes that we went to high school with. Yeah. And we hung out on that campus because it was very close. So, and then October 3rd, I'm like, oh my God, it's October 3rd. It's Mean Girls. So yeah, we just had the Mean Girls reference and then Lincoln, Nebraska. I was like, no way, I have to read this one.
Yeah, definitely.
So what happens here? So this Colleen, she's a secretary to the dean. She gets up and she's going to deliver a message to a professor's room. Now, the way they describe this professor's room is it's a classroom. And then inside the classroom, there's like a private office. So she walks in everything's fine until she's about 4 feet in. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, it smells so musty and like old in this room. Like it's just like a bad odor in the room. And so she looks around and she sees this woman. It says she was very tall with black hair, dressed very nicely with like a long skirt and a white collared shirt. And she said that the woman, she wasn't transparent, but she, when she looked at her, she was like, she's not really there. Like she was like, I'm seeing her, but something's off. She's like, I feel like there's somebody else in the room with me, but she can't see who it is. But she's like, it's male and it's there, but she can't see anything. And she's like looking around the desk, like, where is this person? And then all of a sudden she's like, I need to look out the window. So she looks out the window and it's like land. There's no, now this is 1963 and they had put up new buildings and stuff. They don't exist. She got so freaked that she ran out of the office. And she's like, I have to get out of here. I have to get out of here. I'm in a different time. I'm in a different time. And so she walks out. And as soon as she leaves that office, she's like, okay, I'm normal. Like it's back to normal. So she goes back to her, to the dean's office where she works in her office. And she sits down. She's like, I'll work. I'll be fine. And she's like, I can't, like, I cannot work. And so she goes into her boss's office, the dean. And when she opens the door, he looks at her and he's like, oh my God, you need to sit down. Cause she's like, white as a ghost. And wow. She tells him, she's like, This is what just happened to me. And when she's done talking, he's like, let's go find Dr. Glenn Callan. He was the chairman of the Division of Social Sciences, and he had been on the Wesleyan faculty since 1900. Now, again, this is 1963.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, they go in there and he's like, yeah, he's old. So they're both so intrigued, both men. And so they're like, let's pull some documents.
Well, didn't they try to go in the room?
Yeah, right.
I think that would be the first thing I would do.
It doesn't say that they did. But This room is a professor's room. So it was in use. That's why she was going there. So the person who had that classroom wasn't affected by this at all. And it doesn't sound like anyone else was either.
Okay.
So they pull some pictures, some like rough history on the university. And they narrow it down. They're like, they found a picture from 1915 and they're like, this looks like what you're describing the campus looked like. And she looked at the photo and she's like, yes, this is exactly the time frame that this would be that I saw. There were no new buildings. It was almost all land. This existed and that existed, but that's it. And so they're like, it seems like circa 1915, 1920s. She then looks at the yearbooks and around that time frame, and she's like, that's the woman. And she was a teacher and her name was Clara Mills. And they have on record for Clara that she died right before 9 a.m. in that exact office in 1936. They do not say how she died. It does not seem like it was foul play or anything. So they are not done. They bring in psychical researchers. Their names are Gardner Murphy and H.L. Kleem. And they hypnotize her and they make her walk through that entire moment again. And she's like, it's 8:50 in the morning. I walk in. I look around. There's a strange odor. And then I look at this woman and she's startled to see me. And that's when she disappears. And she's like, and then there's somebody else in the room. And oh, wait, there's the window. And she goes and she looks out the window. And that's when she sees everything looks different from what it should be in 1963. And she's like, I have to leave. And so then she runs out of the room again. They do the same research and the school gives them all this access for them to research. And they narrow it down too without being told. They're like, this is Clara Mills, who died before 9 a.m., in 1936, this is what she looked like. And that's who you're seeing.
Wow.
So then in 1970, the author of this book.
She died in 1936, but they think the ghost is taking place in 1920?
Yes.
Okay.
So in the summer of 1970, this author was accompanied by a psychic sensitive. Her name is Irene Hughes. And the Wesleyan campus lets her in. It's the it's a building called the C.C. White Building, and that's where Colleen Butterbaugh had stepped into the past.
And so they were like, let's just test it. He didn't tell her anything. Like, he knows the story, but he's like, we're just going to go in there. So she goes in and she's like, okay, I'm being drawn to this room, which is the actual room that this incident took place in. And she's like, okay, I see a woman and she is startled to see me. And she's like, she seems like she's very happy to be there, like in good spirits and everything. And then she's like, okay, right now I'm seeing, it's a different time frame. And she is seeing Colleen Butterbaugh walk in 1963 and experience, she's seeing her actual experience and she's describing it to a T. And he's just like, how does she know this? And then she's like, oh, there's a professor, there's a man here at his desk. But she's like, I feel like the desk should be moved. It's not where it is today. And she's like, because it needs to be by the window. And she's like, this woman, which is Colleen, but she didn't know her name. She's like, is looking at him, but she can't see him. And I think it's because she's looking at the desk and he is actually looking out the window. And now she's drawn to look out the window. Oh, and now she runs away. So it's just so weird that she sees these two moments, one in like the 20s and one in the 60s happening.
Had she ever had a moment like this before in her life?
No, nothing. Yeah. So she does her own little research and she, you know, it comes down to do it as well. She's like, this is Clara Mills. And there's nothing that pertinent about Clara Mills. She was just a teacher there. And she happened to die in that room. I wish they said how, but in the last paragraph of this story, it says, the author says, in my opinion, and in the opinions of the researchers who accompanied us to the Wesleyan campus, Hughes accurately described the image of Mills as seen by Butterball in the classic paranormal case. In speaking with knowledgeable faculty members, Mills wore the same style of dress all her life, even after the styles had changed, which made it very difficult to determine the date of the paranormal scene that Butterball had witnessed. Mills joined the faculty in 1912, and it would appear that her spirit has not thought of retiring.
I wanted to see a picture of what Clara looked like, and I actually came across this this article of when they talk about her dying.
In the, really?
Yeah. It's on newspapers.com. I'm trying to see what newspaper it's from. It's from the Evening State Journal, and it says, Miss Clara U. Mills dies in classroom. Miss Clara Urania Mills, music teacher at Nebraska Wesleyan University, was found dead in her classroom at 8 o'clock Friday morning by some of her students. She had removed her hat and laid down her purse and gloves, but hadn't taken off her coat.
Wow.
That's all they know about it. She just suddenly died, probably of a heart attack or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, that sucks.
I don't really know what to make of it. I mean, it is a very weird ghost story, but it very, very intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought so too. And I was like, I got to share.
That coolest thing would be seeing the landscape from another time. That would be the weirdest experience.
Oh, yeah. Such a blast.
But that's what freaks her out the most. Mm-hmm. It's when she looks out the window. She's like, oh, yeah.
Well, I got another strange one.
Ooh.
You're going to close it up.
We're going to close it up with on the strange and unusual.
So they're going to cancel each other out and I'm going to win. No, I'm sorry.
Okay, so my article is from truecrimefiles.com.
Oh.
It was written by Debbie Buck on March 13th, 2019.
Okay.
I won't read the title. It says, on Tuesday, May 13th, 2008, there was a boy. His name was Brandon Swanson. He was 19 years old from Marshall, Minnesota.
Okay.
So earlier that day, he had just completed his first year of college at Minnesota West Community and Technical College. So around like 10:30 at night, he left because he was going to go celebrate this ending his first year of college with some friends. It was about a 45-minute drive. It was a smaller town. And so he was going to go over there. Whatever. So he goes, he hangs out, they have a few drinks, everybody's laughing, having a good time. And around 1:15, he's like, okay, you know, it's going to take him a while to get home. He leaves. So approximately 30 minutes, he gets his car kind of like hung up in a ditch because it's on a gravel road.
Okay.
And so he's like, ah, shit, what am I going to do? He can't get his car out of this ditch. He's not drunk. He's completely fine. And so he starts calling his friends, but it's like almost 2 o'clock in the morning and no one's answering. And he's like, damn it. So he calls his parents, you know, like, can you come get me? Cause I'm stuck. They drive to go pick up their son. So they arrive at where he says he was located. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, we think we're coming up on like where you said you are. Flash your lights. And he's like, okay. So he's like flashing his lights and he's like, flash yours. You know, cause they're like, we don't see anything. He's like, well, flash your lights. So they start flashing their lights and he's on the phone with his mom and she's like frustrated with him. She's like, oh my gosh, like, we can't see you. What do you mean? He's like, what do you mean you can't see me? And they're all frustrated and he gets annoyed. He's like, just hang on. He hangs up. And so
can he see them though?
No. Okay. So his mom, Annette, quickly calls him back. She's like, sorry, I'm losing my temper, but we literally can't see you. So Brandon is like, you know what? I'm going to walk towards town. And there's a little town called Lind. And he's like, I know I can get to Lind, like the little tavern there. Can you meet me in the parking lot? And they're like, I mean, I guess. So they're like, well, stay on the phone with us. And his dad said, Brandon explained to him that he was going to cut through a field so it would go quicker. And along the way, he kept saying like, oh, I'm on a gravel road. He saw two fence lines. And then he also at one point heard running water. And this call lasted for about 47 minutes when all of a sudden mm-hmm. Brandon yelled, oh, shit. And like it was gone. He didn't even get to finish the word. And it went disconnected. So his dad said it sounded like he slipped and he fell. So he kept trying to call him. And the phone did ring. It rang each time, rang and rang and rang, and then would go to voicemail. It did that until the next day when all of a sudden the calls started going straight to voicemail. So obviously his battery had died at that point. At 6:30 in the morning, his parents called the police, which I'm like, I don't know why they waited 4 hours, but they did. So they called the police. They report him missing. They went to try to find him on their own, but I think I would have had the police involved right away. They run his cell phone record, and it shows that when he was calling them, he was actually near an area called Porter, Minnesota, and not Lind. So like, what the hell? Why did he think he was at Lind? He was in Porter. So they're like, great. We've been searching all night in the wrong area. Yeah. So everyone goes over there. They start searching around. They do find his car. His little sedan is sitting there. And there's no sign of injury. There's no damage. They can tell, like, yeah, this wheel definitely is stuck. He was stuck. But outside of that, there's nothing wrong. There's no distress. They can't find him, though. So literally, they search and they search for the whole week. There's no sign of this guy anywhere. So over the next few months, there's a lot of volunteers, a lot of emergency personnel, law enforcement, all of these people on boats and horseback, all of this stuff, because there's this this river that goes across there as well. So they're like, oh, maybe he fell in there. So they do a whole water search. They have cadaver dogs come out. They have dogs that are just trying to get his scent. And they're like, well, these dogs go straight to the water. And usually if they lose the scent, like, oh, this person fell in the water, the dogs will just stop at the water. But they go to the water. They're like, oh, okay. They stop. He must have been in the water. But then the dogs catch his scent like 20 feet down the road, as if like he fell into the water and then got out. So his scent continues.
Weird.
So like, that's weird. But the night that he disappeared, the temperature was about 39 degrees. So they're like, I don't know. He probably would have succumbed to hypothermia at that point. So they can't figure it out because there's literally no remains. The police had no evidence of foul play. And they just have to go with the fact that they think that his remains are somewhere in a 122-mile radius, somewhere between where he was out with friends and his parents' house. So he has never been seen again. Never heard from. Oh, nothing. Man. I know.
I wanted closure here.
Mm-hmm. There is a law that is now in effect in the state of Minnesota. It is called Brandon's Law. Brandon's Law was signed by the governor on May 7th, 2009. So about a year after he disappeared. It took effect almost 2 months later on July 1st. And then this law requires law enforcement to take a missing persons report without delay. So apparently when they went to the police, they said to wait. They were like, well, they'd waited the 4 hours and they were like, hey, our son's missing. And they were like, you know what? A lot of young boys this age kind of like, They do this. They just get off the beaten path and they want to be on their own for a little while. So they lost a day's time. Yes. And so at least there's that. But no, this guy has been gone since 2008. And the reason why I wanted to share it was I was trying to find something just kind of unique and different and a little bit on the creepier side, just because I gravitate towards that stuff. But you always hear about like women vanish out of nowhere or whatever. And I'm like, this is a guy. This is a 19-year-old guy who was in good health and a smart kid. And we have no idea what happened to him.
Yeah. Bad choice going for that tavern. I think he should just stay in his car.
Yeah, and, that field.
Ugh. Yeah, he must have fell off the road or into a hole or something.
Into the water.
It's just so weird. I couldn't imagine talking to somebody and then being like, "What?" I never talked to them again. Like, I was on the phone with them. I don't know what happened. You would just replay that in your brain.
Yeah. If it's dark and it's at night, I'd be like, just stay there. We'll find you. We will keep looking. Just stay there. Don't move. Like, the last thing you want is like somebody, like your kid, off on their own in the middle of the night on a dark road in the cold. Like, that's just the bad.
Yeah.
Situation.
Yeah. Well, man, where did we begin this?
Jesse's little dart. Tap it in.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And then we have Diana's ghost story in Nebraska.
In the past. A step right into the past.
Yeah. A step into the past. And then we have my disappearance of Brandon Swanson.
I think I'll go Brandon Swanson.
I feel like that's happened a few times, sadly, because I grew up in Alaska and that kind of crap happened way too frequently, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the ghost story because that is just too weird. And
it's creepy, huh?
Seeing into the past like that.
It's definitely weird. I do like Brandon Swanson, but I think to Jesse's point, the ghost story, I had never heard a ghost story like that before.
That's a first for me.
That's neat. Well, great. I mean, that's a good win. A good ghost story. Yeah. I was thoroughly sparked, and I hope everybody out there was sparked as well.
Me too, yeah.
If you would like to get a hold of us, we would love to hear from you. Please reach us at our Gmail, that is sparkmyinterestpodcast@gmail.com. You can also reach us at our website at sparkmyinterestpodcast.com. You can find us at our Twitter at @interest_spark, our Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Spark My Interest Podcast. Jesse, how do they rate and review us?
They can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Podcast Addict, and any other platform that allows you to do rates and reviews. We'll also take your likes, your follows, your subscriptions. We're on basically every platform out there, so pick your
poison. Send us a little review.
It was a creeptastic episode for sure.
Yeah.
And until next week, when we can creep you out then,
get sparked.